This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday, the 28th of February. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Daniel Roberts. On tonight's show, we look at the groundbreaking new campaign that puts a human face on the new reality of HIV prevention. We touch base with the creative team of a new short documentary as part of ABC's Love Bites, which explores gender and identity by literally and figuratively going against the grain. And finally, we speak to footballer and equality advocate Jason Ball about a new initiative to take Pride Cups to over 150 AFL football clubs across the country.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
U equals U stands for undetectable equals untransmissible. It refers to people who are living with HIV and are in treatment for that diagnosis. The treatment is taking the levels of the virus down to such a low level in their body that the disease is therefore untransmissible to any sexual partners. A new campaign is breaking ground in Australia, pioneered by community group, the Institute of Many. Dean Arcuri sat down with Nick Hollis to talk all things U things U. U equals U.
I don't worry about my status or my partner's status. For my partners that are HIV positive, if they're undetectable, then it's not like I can get it.
It's a little overdue, I must say, here in Australia. I remember when U equals U first started to gain traction in the United States and beyond a couple of years ago. And I remember seeing all that happen and connecting with Bruce Richmond, who's the founder of the movement, thinking this is so great. The US and other countries need this so badly. We're so fortunate here in Australia. I felt like the conversation around undetectable viral loads had already been happening. You know, ACON's Ending HIV campaign was doing some good stuff around that. VAC had also run with it, as well as the PLHIV orgs. And then in classic fashion, it just blew up and went around the world. UNAIDS signed off on it, the CDC, the World Health Organization all endorsed it. And it was just time for us to start talking about it.
The thing I don't worry about is that I can't pass on HIV to my partner, live my life without giving my status a second thought.
It was really, really important to me that the U equals U campaign centred positive and negative voices. We've been saying for a long time that to get HIV over the line, as in to end it, it's going to take buy-in from not only the positive community, but our potential partners too, and people at risk of HIV. It's kind of just made total sense because Dynamics are the ones who actually initiated this whole campaign and partnership and approached us to do it. Dynamics is a PrEP importation website. It made a lot of sense to try and feature HIV negative voices on PrEP and without. There are people in the campaign who are considering going on PrEP, as well as some positive voices.
It really speaks to the fact that U equals U is really all about us being able to talk.
And also, U equals U is so fantastic because it's a shorthand. We've needed a shorthand. We've been talking now about, you know, the relatively low risk and then no risk associated with having an undetectable viral load if you are a person living with HIV. That's a really long sentence to put on your Scruff profile, you know what I mean? and U equals U is just that perfect shorthand that we need. It's, you know, when we say PrEP, you know, people on PrEP know exactly what that is. Potential partners are pretty clued up on what PrEP is, and PrEP's a really short, sharp, simple phrase that we use that says a lot. We've been saying a lot, but we haven't had a really effective tool to communicate that, and that's why U equals U is so exciting.
Well, as we said, U equals U has been around for a while, but do we really think the message is penetrating? I personally feel like sometimes the message isn't penetrating enough. PrEP gets more attention than U equals U gets, the reality of U equals U and the communities that it's a part of, because there are so many more lines to the narrative that exists.
Absolutely. And you know, when it comes to getting penetrated, I'm all about increased levels of penetration. I think that you're absolutely right, Dean, and this has been a source of not so much frustration but concern as PrEP has been rolled out and platformed as the very necessary missing piece of the puzzle that we've been looking for in the war to end HIV. It's really important to acknowledge that people living with HIV have been doing the heavy lifting in terms of keeping the community as safe as possible for many, many years, and many of your listeners will, of course, have been part of this fight and part of this movement for decades. And I think that, you know, it's really important to acknowledge that, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting, a lot of the blame has come our way over the years for why HIV rates are going up. And not to mention, of course, the discrimination and criminalization, which is still being directed towards people living with HIV. So U equals U is a phenomenally freeing, empowering movement when it comes to living with HIV. And my number one hope is that people living with HIV finally free themselves of those decades of fear and hurt.
So I became involved in the campaign. Basically, Nick asked if I would be keen to share my story and point of view about what U equals U means to me, and how particularly starting PrEP had changed my view and how I negotiate sex and that with partners.
Do you find it's a conversation that's still not had a lot, talking about, you know, undetectable viral loads?
I think it's a conversation that's being had more and more, which is great. I think, you know, growing up as a queer person in Melbourne, there was a lot of fear and ignorance around HIV status, and it probably wasn't something that people were as comfortable talking about because of that stigma. And I think that as people have become more aware and we've had more tools against HIV, such as PrEP and undetectable viral loads, that conversation is becoming easier to have, and people are more confident in terms of sharing that responsibility between HIV negative and HIV positive people.
There's a great line that young Darby uses in one of the U equals U videos, where he says HIV isn't necessarily in the past, but it doesn't have to be in the future. And, you know, he's not talking there about people living with HIV, because we're not going anywhere anytime soon. But certainly the fear of us is something that can, I think, finally be shown the door. And that's what we're really excited to talk about around the country. Bruce Richman, who is the founder of U equals U, the award-winning game changer that he is here in Australia right now. And we're doing U equals U speaking tour events, kind of like town hall chats in order. We go to Canberra, Brisbane, Melbourne, Perth and Sydney. We would have loved to squeeze more cities in, but we can only get Bruce here for a certain amount of time. And that is a really important opportunity. We can put videos out there and get them on everyone's news feed, and we've got street posters going up in Sydney and Melbourne and all that sort of stuff. But as anyone who's dismantled stigma over the years knows, you've got to have those conversations in person. So we really hope that positive and negative people all show up to talk and have their say and listen.
I don't worry about catching HIV like I used to.
I no longer worry about passing on HIV to my partner. Whatever barriers did exist between me and love are no longer there. U equals U means we can love without fear.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking to Nick Hollis and Mark, speaking about a groundbreaking new campaign that puts a human face on the new reality of HIV prevention, U equals U.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
We all have hair growing in places we'd rather it didn't. Well, maybe that's a massive assumption on my behalf, but let's go with it for the sake of the next story. What if the hair that grew on your body totally misrepresented the gender that you identify with? Desperately Seeking Shavers is featured in the Love Bites short film series, now available to stream on ABC iView. In the film, writer and director Emmett Aldrin explores this notion by putting their subjects in front of the mirror and over the bathroom sink while they figuratively and literally go against the grain.
If you were to say it's a documentary set in a bathroom and it's about trans people, like, people would all too quickly probably cut to thinking about, like, junk and, you know, what's under your clothes in terms of, like, you know, people really try and relate, like, transness to, like, sexual organs and biology in that kind of way. Like, I think that, like, it's also freeing, but to, like, I guess for trans people to take over that space, talk about their experiences and their bodies intimately without it just being about those things all the time, which I think is kind of oppressing. I don't know. I can't speak for everyone, but certainly media that, like, comes to me sometimes, like, I feel is very much about that, you know, that sort of, like, what's between your legs scenario.
Do you want me to, like, actually say how I feel about my hair?
Yes.
Strength.
Comfort.
Fantasy.
Bleach.
Your hair could be an act of rebellion against conformity or against your assigned gender. For trans people, it can be a really, like, creative form of expression.
ABC TV's Love Bites documentary series gives a glimpse into what life has been like and is like for LGBTQI people. At only 6 to 7 minutes each, you can binge all 10 docos on iView for free. Desperately Seeking Shavers is one of those documentaries, exploring why something so simple as hair can give a huge impact on someone's sense of identity. We spoke to Emmett Aldred, the writer and director of the documentary, about where this inspiration came from.
Personal experience was a large factor. Also, I thought that the topic being so specific would be an interesting and maybe more freeing way to talk about transness. So I watch a lot of content that is about people in transition or, you know, dismissing gender. And it's sort of like generally the viewpoint is usually from, you know, A to B, sort of like they were born this way, they transitioned to this thing, you know. And I thought that maybe just like looking at something that was like, I don't know, kind of like very specific and a very expressive part of our body might be a better way to look at gender expression than like thinking about like biology.
Exploring tales from the trans and non-binary community, Tom, Dawn and Elizabeth talk about what their hair or lack of hair means to them as we see visuals of them getting ready in the bathroom.
Everyone has a really different meeting point to their hair, what they like, what they don't like. So it very quickly became very intimate.
When I was younger, it was a constant battle between me and my mum of how I wanted to have my hair.
People really letting us into like private moments, I felt, or private memories about, you know, things that had happened with their hair in a funny way.
When I had long, long curly hair, people would just decide that they really needed to know what it felt like and they would just go to grab it.
It felt very like sort of like gooey warm feelings on the actual day of the first interview. We shot it in two blocks, wherein the first day was like, you know, studio interviews and this sort of thing. And then the second day we were shooting like the practice of people engaging with stuff that they have in a bathroom. The first day that we were there doing like the sit down interviews and everything, everyone like, you know, huddled around in the morning and had a big group hug and this sort of thing. Because, yeah, it felt very much like about the community, about the trans community, very insular in some kind of way.
There's something beautifully personal about the work, because as we're hearing interviews with the subjects, we're seeing them get ready, much like we would every single day. But what hair means to these members of the trans and non-binary community is something different to what you'd think.
Like, definitely that's what we wanted out of the project long-term, for it to be very personal and intimate. But, yeah, I didn't realise how much of an impact using just one bathroom for all three subjects was going to have on the way people engage with their stories, because I've had a number of people now like get back to me about the film and comment on that exact thing, saying that had it been in their own, like, because it's just one bathroom that we filmed them all in, we got them to bring their own personal items in so that they could still, like, do their regular routine and that sort of thing. But, yeah, we used just one space, and people have said that that really helps in a way with the storytelling, because, like, we're listening to more of what everyone is saying as opposed to trying to paint a picture of their full life and what their bathroom looks like and, you know, like what that says about them and all these other things. Like having sort of the blank canvas, like the same bathroom for each person, I think allows people to think about what they've decided to say in their interview more.
In the documentary, Dawn is shaving her face and she tells us about herself, something she didn't have a problem with doing during the filming.
I'm so used to, like, getting myself ready everywhere, even, like, I've even done it in, like, Molly's bathroom. So it's like, I don't really mind about where it's been done as long as there's a bathroom there to get ready. I was actually the one who said to the producer, to Christina Ra and to Emmett, that I can shave on camera. Like, I felt that it would be a good way for someone who's in their teens to see that, okay, we don't need to do laser and everything. Like, sometimes if you don't have the money to do it, just do what you can to get by until you can afford things. So that's why I really wanted to shave on camera.
Since puberty, I've never liked anybody hearing me. Before I came to the realization that I was trans, I was like, no, it's just a little gay boy. I was like, no, I don't like facial hair. I don't like any kind of hair on me. So I'd, like, shave, like, every day. I'll be shaving.
I'm so proud. I'm very proud. Like, I've messaged everyone. I'm like, you need to watch it. It's very, like, informative. It'll, like, it's a good behind the scenes of, like, stuff that we do to prepare ourselves pretty much for everyone to view us. I had a friend who messaged me and was like, you know, I didn't think of things like this, like, you know, like how you have to shave like your face and do this and that, just to, you know, be able to have everyone else view the way that you want to be viewed. And I was like, yeah, I don't, like, talk about it, but I'm not exactly, like, I'm very open with it. So if someone asked me, I would have obviously said, yeah, I shave. Not a big thing. That's why I wanted it to be filmed and put out there for everyone to see.
Letting people be their own authors is kind of the best way to get the most honest work.
It was more of a positive story and not such a negative, like, it didn't view us as victims or anything. It was more of just, like, an insight to things that we do in order for people to view us the way that we want them to view us. Just everyone should go and watch it. I'm really proud of it.
You can check out Desperately Seeking Shavers on ABC iView right now, as well as all the other documentaries that are part of ABC's Love Bites.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Hot off the heels or boots of the AFLW Pride game last week, footballer and equality advocate Jason Ball has announced a crowdfunding campaign to roll out the successful Pride Cup to over 150 AFL football clubs across Australia. I spoke to Jason about the success of the many Pride Cups so far and how he educates people in regional and metropolitan areas about the strength that can be found in embracing the LGBTI community. Jason, before we get to the new crowdfund campaign, maybe you could rejig our memory on what Pride Cup actually stands for as an organisation.
Oh, absolutely. So the Pride Cup, which was founded back in 2014 by my local footy club, Yarra Glen, is about celebrating inclusion and diversity for the LGBTI community. So we themed one of our home games around celebrating the LGBTI community so that every supporter, official and player knew that they didn't have to choose between being themselves and the game that they loved. And that was something that growing up for me, I felt like I did have to choose. I hid my sexuality for a long time growing up playing football because of the use of homophobic language and homophobic behaviour. But at the end of the day, while it took me 10 years to finally come out to my club, when I did, not only did they stand by my side, but together we founded this initiative, and it's been amazing to see it continue to grow.
As you mentioned, it did take years for you to come out while you were playing in a regional football club, and that was, as you mentioned, due to homophobic slurs and, you know, whatever else we've all been through that we all understand and sympathise. Is that changing, Jason, or do you think things are sort of as bad as they have been?
Well, I think it's changing as a result of initiatives like the Pride Cup. You know, around these games, we're going out there into mainstream football codes, into country areas. So we're basically going into some of, probably you would say, stereotypically the most homophobic environments in our community and turning them into our biggest allies. And not only does the Pride Cup include, you know, a rainbow 50-metre line and rainbow jumpers for the teams as a, you know, a real strong symbolic show of acceptance, but as part of the Pride Cup, we also designed and delivered the first ever education program for footballers to help them challenge homophobia so that more LGBTI people can access all of the health and wellbeing benefits that come from participating in community sport.
Well, let's talk about those educational processes. I was actually talking with a friend the other day who's also gay, and he was saying that he had to have a chat to his nephews when he realised they were using "that's gay" as a slur for, like, you know, anything that's bad. I certainly remember that from school and how uncomfortable it made me. How are you having that conversation with, you know, in particular grown men in football clubs?
Well, in order to really get through to them, to help them understand the damage that causes, I talk about my own experience growing up playing footy. That was one of constant hiding, of constant second-guessing everything that I said or did. And a lot of it was because of the language that not only the crowd coming over the fence, not only the opposition, but my own teammates were using. And so whether it's the word gay to mean, you know, bad or soft or weak, or slurs like fag or poof or homo, you know, that was constant. And not only did it weigh heavily on my mind and impact on my mental health, but I also didn't play as well as I could have. You know, there's a lot of good reasons to communicate to football clubs why this language is unacceptable. And it's in their interest too to transform that culture.
You've just announced a new crowdfunding campaign to roll out Pride Cups across 150 AFL clubs throughout Australia. What's the reaction been like so far?
Well, the reaction has been great so far from the community, because we know that the community is ready for this and they want this. You know, 5 years after the first Pride Cup in Yarra Glen back in 2014. This year, there are 12 football leagues across Victoria who are wanting to hold a Pride Cup, and more getting in touch every week. And in order to support them, we need organisational capacity to do that. We want to create a national support program that can work with clubs and coaches to help them develop and execute their own Pride Cup. And, you know, we want to include in that a national brand and marketing strategy to get the word out there, because we think and we believe strongly that as soon as more clubs know that this is an opportunity that they can be part of, as soon as they have support to do so, we think it is possible within 3 years to get a Pride Cup happening in every single football league across Australia. And so that's a big target, 150 football leagues in 3 years, but that's what we're setting ourselves to do. We think that this has real potential for governments, for corporate and philanthropic support. But firstly, we're going out there to the community, to the joy listeners, to all of the people who have seen the positive impacts of the Pride Cup firsthand. Chip in, show us that, and show the rest of Australia that we want this initiative to grow. You know, in places like Hamilton, you know, where many LGBTI people who I spoke to had an awful time coming out growing up. But, you know, they came back for the Pride Cup in Hamilton. And when they did, they felt accepted with rainbow messages in every shop window. You know, in Gippsland, even the local power station lit up their cooling towers with rainbow lights. You know, no other event has put LGBTI people and their stories on the front pages of regional papers quite like the Pride Cup. We're literally transforming attitudes by utilizing the power of sport. And, you know, you can hear the passion in my voice. It's something that I'm I care so strongly about, and we have such unlocked potential here. We've achieved so much with very little resources and support already. Just imagine what we can achieve if we really get behind it.
I can hear the passion in your voice. Are you surprised by this? Because, like, in terms of... Okay, when I was growing up, personally, I resented sport. I was a dancer, and I couldn't link the two. Now I love AFL in particular. But particularly in the last few years, there's been a real movement towards pride and in AFL, and we've seen these pride groups come out of all the main AFL teams. We just come off the AFLW Pride game last week, which was a huge success. Are you surprised at how? I guess it's not easy for you. It's a lot of hard work, but at how it seems to be adopted in such an enthusiastic way.
Well, I think we have really made, you know, some strides specifically within the code of AFL. You know, not only do we have this Pride Cup exploding at the grassroots level across into more regional towns, but the AFL through St Kilda and Sydney picking it up and then having their Pride game at the national level. And indeed, I think it's the actual involvement of the supporters, those LGBTI people out there who are members of their club, who love their club, who are now becoming organised and being visible and coming together and really becoming that touch point between the club and their own supporters who are LGBTI. And I think that's the power that is getting clubs moving on this issue, to know that it's their own community. We're not, the LGBTI community is not coming from the outside trying to impose its agenda on the AFL. The LGBTI community on the inside, we're fans, we're players, we're officials and umpires. And that visibility that we've seen over the past few years, I think is really, you know, it doesn't surprise me that we've gotten as far as we have, because there's such power in that.
Okay, so where can...
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That was Jason there, Jason Ball there, finishing off that report with me earlier today. And that's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Daniel Roberts.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.